This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
No Josh Graham today. Darren Vaught in for him here on The Drive. And we've done some shuffling here in our first hour, but it's all good. We're good. We're just going to make do. Other people have their things that they got to do. We got to get a show on the air for 3 hours here. Quite frankly, it's a Friday, and as Josh would definitely remind you, it's a football Friday, which is why we bring in our next guest of Yahoo Sports, Frank Schwab. You can follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. Frank, welcome to The Drive, man. How are you?
Hey, what's going on?
So I wanted to, obviously, with the Super Bowl being 9 days away, we can kind of put that stuff largely on the back burner, but I do want to look forward a bit at the big game. Prior to doing that, we had a couple of big headlines just in the past 24 hours around the NFL, and one of which is covered really well, I know, by one of your colleagues at Yahoo, Dan Wetzel. The Antonio Brown saga just takes another turn. But with him turning himself in Florida last night, it seems like this is a coming-to-head point in the Antonio Brown stuff, because the judge has required a mental evaluation to see exactly where he's at with potentially having something going on chemically, whether related to head injuries or not. What's your just big picture takeaway from the Antonio Brown stuff? Because, man, what 18 months ago, it was not nearly the chaotic situation that it is now. He was on the trajectory to have a Hall of Fame career as a wide receiver.
Yeah, and it's been stunning and sad in many ways just how this has all, you know, come apart. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of an aside, like, we also have to look at Mike Tomlin and the way he kind of held this all together. Like, at some point, you know, after the trade and all that, it was, well, you know, with the Pittsburgh Steelers enabled him and all that. Now you kind of look back and you say, maybe they were actually helping him more than we knew. And then outside of the cocoon of the Steelers, everything unraveled. It's tough to tell the timetable, of course, but at least you can look back at that, because the last 12, 13 months have just been, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you think about all the things that have happened, and we've all been wondering, I think, is something wrong with him? Is something, like, seriously? Like, and I don't mean to make jokes about that or anything like that, but legitimately, you did wonder, is there something, is there something mentally wrong with Antonio Brown? His behavior was so erratic that you couldn't help but think that, and now, you know, maybe this gets him to a better place. Maybe he had to hit rock bottom for this to happen. A lot of bad things have happened along the way, so I'm not painting Antonio Brown to be a 100% sympathetic figure here, but I think we all can kind of step back and say, if he needs help, and this has all maybe been a cry for help, hopefully he gets it, and hopefully this is kind of the step towards it as extreme as it has been.
Yeah, sure thing. I think you're right on a lot of points there, including, you know, it's among the things I think we all were thinking is questioning whether or not he needed the type of help that he's going to presumably get here. And you hate to speculate, but again, hopefully this is where it turns around for Antonio Brown, or at least levels out, because it's been nothing but a downward spiral. Earlier today, Eli Manning of the New York Giants for 16 seasons announced his retirement from the NFL. And Frank, I guess we could do the inane, should he be a Hall of Famer thing, but I don't want to drive you into that. I think the simpler, easier to answer question is, what do you think is going to happen? So I'll ask it this way. Is Eli Manning, in your mind, he of course isn't eligible for a handful of years, is he going to be a Hall of Famer?
Oh yeah, I think no doubt. I really do, because when you think about the template of what voters like, they like counting stats, or you can quantify. They like rings for quarterbacks. Most guys who have won multiple Super Bowls are in the Hall of Fame. I think Jim Plunkett might be the only one who's not. And, you know, he played in a big market. Let's not act like that doesn't matter. If Eli Manning had the exact same career in Kansas City or Denver or wherever, maybe it doesn't resonate as much, but he played in New York, and that's a big deal. He was always good to the media. Let's not act like that doesn't matter. We've kind of seen that before. So just there's just so many boxes that Eli Manning checks, and he's kind of like, you know, he was a first pick, and he came from football royalty, and he was a star before he even entered the NFL. I think all these things add up to people are going to vote for Eli Manning. Now, you know, maybe I'm just being too cynical and just thinking they're going to rubber stamp him in, but I think he will get in eventually. Just, again, when you look at the guys who got into the Hall of Fame, Eli Manning checks all the boxes they like. So I think he will get in. And, look, I don't know. I don't think it's egregious. I really don't. I don't know that I'd vote for him necessarily. But, hey, he did have a great career. He did have a lot of great accomplishments. He did represent the NFL really, really well. So I don't think he'd be, you know, the worst guy who's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Frank Schwab is with us here on The Drive. You can follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. Frank, looking ahead to the Super Bowl, and again, it's not until next weekend, and I joked earlier that I'm of course, filling in for the regular host of this program, and that's part of the reason why, right? It's a chance for a long weekend for Josh, who's normally in here, because of the lack of a game with the Super Bowl. But I was intrigued by, you tweeted out a little bit earlier this week that you normally have a pretty strong initial reaction after the conference championship games when it comes to, okay, such and such is probably going to win the Super Bowl, or I think they're going to win the Super Bowl. You didn't think that way with the 49ers and Chiefs matchup. What struck you as problematic right out of the gate for that one?
Yeah, and you know, I'm not saying I'm right every year, but every year it's like, okay, I really like the Rams.
Sure.
This year, this matchup is so good. I mean, it's just, you can talk yourself into either team, and that's what I think makes this such a fun game, is, you know, that point spread's about 1 point, and that sounds about right. If it was a pick, I'd totally agree with that. I think you could talk yourself into San Francisco playing great defense, controlling the game on the ground, not making mistakes because they're basically, you know, a ground-based team now, and being really well coached by Kyle Shanahan, having a good game plan, having the speed to match up with the 49er or with the Chiefs offense, and them winning that way. Of course, you can also make the argument for the Chiefs that Patrick Mahomes is going to be the best player in the field. They have the best playmakers on offense. They, you know, aside from two weird slow starts of just dominated both teams they've played. You know, they outscored the Texans 51-7 over the last three quarters of that game. I mean, as a playoff team, they did that too. And their defense is probably better than we think, and we give them credit for. So you look at you can talk yourself into either team and make a great argument for it. And I think that's why the point spread is what it is. I think that's why I'm having a tough time picking a winner, just because I really truly believe this is one of those coin flip matchups that they played 100 times. That it might really be 50-50.
So even given a week or so to mull it over, that's still kind of where you are, is closer to the center?
I think I'm leaning 49ers at the moment, just because their defense has been ridiculous. If you looked at that Minnesota game, Minnesota's not a bad offense. They're not. Kirk Cousins had a good year. Dalvin Cook's a great player. They got a couple great receivers, good tight end. And it seemed like San Francisco was playing 14 guys on the field. Every time anybody from Minnesota Vikings touched a ball, there's three guys around them. It was unbelievable. And then that carried over into the Green Bay game where, yeah, Green Bay got some stuff late that really didn't matter. But same thing, that nobody could move. They just could not move the ball in San Francisco. The fact that San Francisco can rush four guys, they're a great defensive line, I think is a big difference. I mean, you go back to 2007 Patriots, and that great offense, well, the Giants got after them with four guys and could drop seven in the coverage and be very comfortable. You know, we're going to get to the quarterback with just these four. I think same way with the 49ers. And that kind of wrecks your offense a little bit when you're not having to send the defense isn't having to send a fifth guy, sixth guy in a blitz. All of a sudden, there's a lot of guys in those passing lanes. It's going to make it a lot tougher. So I am leaning towards the 49ers, but look, people are going to make a great argument for the Chiefs. There again, you give me the Chiefs with the best player in football. Yeah, that makes sense too.
Frank Schwab is with us at Yahoo Schwab on Twitter of Yahoo Sports. Do you see? Is there one figure in this game that you see as having more hanging in the balance, I'll say. More riding on this game because there's, of course, the redemption stories, the Andy Reid versus Kyle Shanahan, right? Reid's never won the Super Bowl, presumably the best coach without having won that Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator when the 28-3 lead was blown and they were really just playing, or the play calling was preparing to not lose rather than continuing to play to score and win in that. You've got the Richard Sherman story coming back from his Achilles, and then the friction between he and Darrelle Revis as well. Does anyone stick out more to you as having more riding on this Super Bowl?
Yeah, to me it's easily Andy. I mean, you look at the difference between one win in this game and not winning a Super Bowl, and it's amazing. He is one of the great all-time coaches, and nobody considers him that because he doesn't have a ring. He is seventh all-time in wins, and the six guys ahead of him all have multiple championships and are all legends in the sport. It's Paul Brown and Don Shula, Bill Belichick, Tom Landry, Curly Lambeau. I mean, the titans of the sport are the only guys who have more wins than Andy Reid, but yet we don't view him that way. We don't view Andy as one of the legendary coaches of all time, and it's because he doesn't have a championship. If he wins one, that all changes. I don't think he needs to win two or three or four. If Andy Reid wins one Super Bowl, he gets off that Marty Schottenheimer list, and all of a sudden we look at him entirely differently. I don't know that Andy Reid's a Hall of Famer right now. I think he should be, but when you look at the history, only three coaches from the Super Bowl era have made the Hall of Fame without a ring. George Allen, who did a lot of his work before the Super Bowl, and then Marv Levy and Buck Grant, who each went to four conference championships. It's really hard without a Super Bowl ring to make the Hall of Fame, so I think Andy Reid's kind of borderline Hall of Fame now. If they win one game on Sunday, he becomes a first ballot, no doubt, Hall of Famer. So it's just, his legacy changes so much with one win, whereas I think the other guy, Kyle Shanahan's going to have other chances. Patrick Mahomes is probably going to be in contention for years and years and years. And, you know, guys like Sherman's already won one, and he's going to Hall of Fame either way. Andy's the one guy in this game who, if he wins, his entire legacy changes, and he goes from being like, he's the best not to win it, to this guy's one of the all-time greats, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
That's great perspective with the list of guys as coaches in the Halls of Fame, the Hall of Fame, without having won Super Bowls. That's a crazy list to be on. And Reid, for my money, a relatively easy guy to root for, too. So I personally would love to see him to etch his way into that group and just make it an easy decision, because you're right. He's been a really, really good coach for a long, long time. But Frank Schwab, appreciate the visit, man. I know you had an important call come in for a story, so appreciate your flexibility and being able to jump on with us. And thanks for coming on to The Drive today.
Yep, no doubt. Appreciate it.
You got it. That's Frank Schwab at Yahoo Schwab on Twitter. Writes for the NFL. Well, writes on the NFL for Yahoo Sports. Has been there a long time and does some excellent work for my money.
What the hell is this?
The Drive.
This is kind of a great thing, and I'll tell you why.
Get caught up with all things sports.
That's awesome!
Well, that's not totally true. He talks about The Bachelorette, too.
Yes!
The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Darren Vaught with you on The Drive, in for Josh Graham. That was funny just now. Do you guys see me like on my phone? You knew I was going to be, I was here.
You scared me a little bit, man.
So, that was Tubby Smith. He couldn't remember what time he was supposed to come on. I was like, nah, we'll call you in like 10 or 15, coach. Man, that was funny. All right. So, I'm in for Josh Graham today. Darren Vaught, hi, if you're just joining us. Hope you're doing well. We will now welcome in Brian Geisinger at BGeis_Bird on Twitter of ACCSports.com and the ACC Sports Journal, also Sports Channel 8, the BuzzBeat podcast, talking Hornets there. BG is currently in the middle of watching the Hornets take on the Milwaukee Bucks in Paris, France, for that international NBA contest. BG, what's going on? How are the Hornets doing?
The Hornets are playing. First off, Darren, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Bonjour, I should say, right?
I don't know French. Nope. You're going to walk us down this plank, and I'm going to fall out and drown.
Right. Okay. Well then, let's veer back to very generic basketball commentary instead. But no. The Hornets actually got a little 5-point lead at halftime here against the Bucks today, and they've played really well so far. Giannis with 11 first half points, but they've bothered him at the rim some. I think this is about as well as the Hornets could defend against the number two offense in the NBA, and the Hornets have a bottom three defense. So far, so good, including the Hornets being able to play well with P.J. Washington in foul trouble and with 0 points. But cool event to see Tony Parker in the house. Lots of other famous former NBA players, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Dikembe Mutombo. MJ is obviously there. And you get to see Nick Batum playing. He got the start for the Hornets today, too. So, all in all, a cool event. And seems to be well attended both by people in Paris and by some former NBA stars as well.
Nick Batum, a France native, getting the start for the Hornets.
Yep,
so, that's certainly
exactly.
Cool to see. This game was scheduled when Tony Parker also was part of the team. So, obviously something that the Hornets, because of those reasons, lobbied for and got. And just unfortunately for them, they're facing the best team in the NBA with the Bucks, but it sounds like they're handling them pretty well. BG, you and I called a basketball game last night, so much like I did for a couple of hours at the Millis Center at High Point, I want to pick your brain about college hoops for a little bit. In terms of the ACC, Florida State is ranked in the top five for the first time since 1972, and I feel like there's just this overarching perception of Seminoles basketball because of their presence as a football school, and what brought them to the ACC to begin with. But they've used the basketball brand of the ACC to steadily increase what they do with their basketball program. And Leonard Hamilton, again, with a top five team, maybe his best yet in his days as the Seminoles head coach. But there's the perception that they just never push it over the hump. Is this team the real deal to you?
I think they certainly could be. They definitely have their – this Florida State team is really good. I don't know if they're quite elite offensively, and therefore they have these stretches when the game bogs down in the half court where they can go a while without scoring, you know. And even some of these recent games, like the Virginia win – a week and a half ago, Virginia is a great defensive team too, but Florida State really struggled to shoot and score in that game. Just 12 of 32 on twos, under 0.9 points per possession in that game. The thing with them is they've got a good mix of veterans with some really talented young players. Got a great coaching staff led by Stan Jones and Leonard Hamilton, and they just know they can get a stop, like, whenever they need to, you know? And so I've seen them in a lot of close games so far this season. And I think that toughness and the ability to rely on, okay, on one end of the court, we're okay. We're not great at offense, but we're okay. Defensively, though, we're elite. And we can get a stop. We can force a turnover. We can block a shot. And they are. And they lead the nation in block rate. They lead the nation in defensive turnover rate. Like, they make life miserable for opposing teams by switching 1 through 5. Their help assignments are incredible. And then they've got some guys that are going to play in the NBA. Devin Vassell, Patrick Williams, Trent Forrest. Like, they've got serious athletes that have bought into this system and are playing a connected yet, like, chaotic for the opposing offense's style of basketball. And, yeah, they could absolutely make a run to a Final Four.
BG, Brian Geisinger is with us at BGeis_Bird on Twitter. Moving a little bit closer to home, and the Duke Blue Devils, who for much of the season have looked like the best team in the ACC, although Florida State is right there, Louisville is right there in the conversation as well. They bounced back with a win over Miami after losing two straight, including to the Louisville Cardinals at Cameron Indoor Stadium, and I know you were there for that one. What is there to be desired in this Duke Blue Devil lineup, because it's about as deep a team as I remember Coach K having or using at the very least. And although they don't have the marquee star like a Zion Williamson, I think it would be ridiculous of us to expect that Coach K would have one of those every single year because of the generational nature of Zion's right. talent. Although they don't have a marquee star or even maybe like a top five NBA draft pick, they've got a lot of really good players. Is there any holes with this team in your eyes?
They have, as far as like, you know, this year in college basketball, if we're looking at just the 2019-2020 season, the Duke, Gonzaga, there's maybe a couple other teams out here you could name, are as close to a complete team as you're going to find. I still think, again, Duke can have its issues offensively, and we saw in the two losses against Clemson and Louisville, they struggled to score. The Louisville game was a really, you know, bloody shooting performance for them. 42% effective shooting, just 6 of 25 on threes in that game. As much as Trey Jones has made strides as a shooter, and he has, he's shooting 36% on threes this year, 55% at the rim. Like, he is a good shooter. He's a more efficient offensive player. Like, the ball's in his hands a lot. And I do think a fair amount of the threes he's made this season have been spot-ups, off the catch. And he shot those well, and that's an important shot for him on the next level. But I think it's a little curious where, and maybe it's a little, I'm focusing on a really specific example here, which maybe isn't entirely fair, but like in a close game, 4 minutes left, I mean, I think I know who's going to have the ball for Duke. It's going to be Trey Jones, and he's probably going to be looking to pass to Vernon Carey. And as good as Vernon Carey has been this season, he's struggled finishing at the rim a little bit recently. His turnovers have spiked some. He's shooting under 60% at the free throw line, too. And he draws a ton of fouls per 40 minutes. For most of the season, he's been top two or three in the country. He was number one for a little while, too, in that category. But I just think there's a chance for the offense to get a little clunky, a little robotic, but you're picking a nit with them because they've just got so many good players. There's something to be said about the fact that Duke can go 10 deep legitimately, and six or seven of these guys are NBA players. And Jordan Goldwire and Joey Baker, these guys being better than Duke could have expected in the fall. What a boon for them. Even with Alex O'Connell struggling, Duke really has a lot of different pieces. They can play a lot of different styles. Jack White gives them flexibility. Cassius Stanley gives them flexibility. So does Matthew Hurt. Trey Jones and Jordan Goldwire being able to play together. It's a lineup with the two point guards that Coach K's relied on a lot recently, and you're seeing a ton in conference play. They need to get healthy, I think, is one of the big things. Wendell Moore Jr. has missed the last five games for Duke. I know he struggled some with turnovers this season, but he's a good player. He'll get back and help them and give them a little more versatility too. But I just think, they're top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. They're as close to a complete team as you're going to find, certainly in the ACC and probably all of college basketball this season.
Brian Geisinger is with us, accsports.com, as well as Sports Channel 8, at BGeis_Bird on Twitter. I'm cutting you a little short because I got to get to Tubby Smith on the other side, but BG, nicknames because of Tubby came up earlier in the show. Did you ever have a nickname that was like institutionalized? Like, no one calls Tubby by his actual first name, Orlando. Did you ever have a nickname where, I know BG is sort of one. It's a little bit lazy with the abbreviation, but I that's what I use.
I think BG's become it, but in high school it was Bird, which is actually in my Twitter handle.
Nice,
that was
okay.
Like a high school basketball nickname. So yeah, I had a decent jump shot when I was younger. Now it's BG though.
Lost the Larry Legend like jumper, and thus you lost the nickname.
Yeah.
Well, yes. BG, appreciate the time. Get back to that Hornets game in Paris. Convenient that it matches up with midday here. That makes for a nice little matinee for you. But appreciate the call, and I know we've got the call together again at High Point on ESPN Plus tomorrow. So I'll see you then.
Sounds good. I'll go back to watching The Greek Freak now, speaking of nicknames. But, yeah, looking forward to tomorrow. enjoy the rest of the show, Darren.
Cool. That's Brian Geisinger at BGeis_Bird. On Twitter, I should have known, Bird. He's told me that story before of why Bird is in his Twitter handle, so that makes sense to me in a lot of ways. Do we dare ask how Tubby got his nickname on the other side?
For sure. I got to know. I have to know.
All right. Well, let's get to break. Let's get some ads in because somebody's got to pay the bills around here. And then we'll talk to Coach Tubby Smith, the legend, on the other side. This is The Drive.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
He's confident, smart, witty, vicious, brutal, vindictive, a monster.
This is an evil man.
Maybe, but he knows his sports. Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad. I'm gonna give you
Welcome back into The Drive. Darren Vaught in for Josh Graham today. Around the world of college basketball, the American Cancer Society kicked off its 27th Coaches versus Cancer campaign this week. You've probably seen its hashtag Suits and Sneakers Week amongst coaching staffs and other professionals around the sport. And because our next guest, head coach for High Point University, Tubby Smith, is a council member for Coaches versus Cancer, that's part of the reason I wanted to have him on. So I now welcome in Coach Tubby Smith. First of all, Coach, how are you today? And second, tell me a little bit about your involvement with Coaches versus Cancer, because I know it's a long-standing relationship that you have with the campaign and something that means a lot to you.
Yes, it does. Well, today is a recovery day. It's like we just got... I had a root canal last night. It was something bad in losing last night. So it's been a miserable day. So, but you know, we've got to regroup and get ready for Longwood tomorrow. But Coaches versus Cancer has been something that's been part of our, I guess, part of our lives for a number of years. I don't think anybody has. And it's, you know, cancer has touched all of our lives in some form or fashion. I lost my oldest sister to cancer, and then dealing with cancer myself, prostate cancer. I recognized how important it was to get involved, and we've been doing PSAs, public service announcements for that for a long time.
Coach Tubby Smith is with us. There's actually a really cool. Video PSA. I guess they've been using it as a television commercial in some instances, and it's you and your good friend Roy Williams of the University of North Carolina. Jim Boeheim is in there. Coach John Calipari of Kentucky is in there as well. So it's a pretty cool shot of you and in the Millis Center in the background, talking about, you know, your motivation to help fight the cancer and such a vicious disease. So it's pretty cool to see, and obviously it's made an impact because it's around the entire game, and this is something Suits and Sneakers Week that raises awareness across all levels of basketball. I mean, I know, you know, I did undergraduate at a Division III school, and they're partaking, and the entire conference for them is getting involved and participating in the Suits and Sneakers movement.
Yeah, it's been a big part of the NABC. You know, we invest our time and energy and coaches go around and speak. In fact, we're going to do, you know, Subway is one of the sponsors, and we'll be building or making sandwiches at the Subway on North Main soon. So I think that's next week as well. Yeah. So we've been engaged and been on the committee for a long time. And I bet 8 to 10 years now. And there are a number of coaches that have donated their time and energy, and fans that donate money and funds to fund the research needed to beat this thing, so to beat cancer.
Coach, I have to know, with the Subway event coming up, how would you self-evaluate as your own personal skills as a sandwich artist, as they sometimes call Subway employees?
Oh, I would say I border on being a chef.
Is that right?
Yeah, I can really make a sandwich. That's about all I can make. No, they make it pretty easy for you. When I say that, they make it. The folks there at Subway are gracious enough to, you know, it is hard. Imagine doing that, getting it just right for people, just the right of mustard and you know, the right of oil and vinegar mixes. That's what I specialize in. So it'll be fun doing it, and we look forward to seeing people there. You know, because we'll have and people that donate. So Subway will donate so much money to cancer and ABC Coaches versus Cancer, and I would imagine over $100 million we've donated over the years or raised over the years to help fight cancer.
Coach Tubby Smith of High Point University is with us here on The Drive. Coach, one more thing before I ask you a couple of basketball-related questions. Nicknames came up earlier on the show, And I mean the types of nicknames that have become, you know, institutionalized. I would consider Tubby as yours, because the guys on the other side of the glass, when I quizzed them earlier in the show, could not tell me your actual first name. So with that in mind, I ask you, does anyone call you Orlando anymore?
No, I don't think they do. My mom was probably the last one that did, and she's passed for some time now. But I don't think anybody really knew who my real name, and it's used an alias. I use it when I'm staying in hotels and stuff. No one knows.
That's sneaky. Name. That's good.
Yeah.
How did the nickname Tubby come about?
I don't know. Well, I'm from a large family. I have 16 brothers and sisters, 12 sisters. I had 12 sisters and 4 brothers. So you imagine giving names. My oldest brother, Guffrey. My sister who passed away was May Helen. They would have Marva, Zarita, Alberta, Holly Gill, Benita, Ramona, Desiree, Cindy, Shane, and then the boys, Odell, O'Day, Orlando, and then it was, oh no, not another one, the name Tubby, when you grow up on a farm in a rural area, you don't have indoor plumbing, you don't have running water. I really didn't have that until I was, 15 years old in our home. My dad built our own home. But before that, you had to draw water from a well or from a pump. And so when you bathe, you didn't bathe daily like now. You go turn on the shower, you go get in the tub, or anything like that now. You had to go get buckets and pails of water, put tubs of water just to fill a tub up. So... And you had your turn in the tub, And so when I got in the tub, and if it was a cold day like today, you were up against the king heater, the oven, the stove, the big, where you're putting wood in it to heat the house. And you get in that water, I didn't want to get out. Hence the name Tubby. That's the one I use. My mom used to say, boy, you were just a little fat kid, and we used to call you Tubby. You look like a tub. I'm like, no, Mom, don't ever say that, okay?
That implication made me a little bit wary of asking the question, to be honest, because I didn't. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you've used the name of all these years, so it doesn't offend you, obviously. But
I tried to get away from it when schools were consolidated, and integration took place, and I was going from an all black school to all white school, George Washington Carver to Great Mills High School in 1966 in Southern Maryland, 6566. I get to the school, I'm going to say, okay, I'm gonna go with. Henry is my middle name, so I'm going Henry Orlando. Nobody's going to call me Tubby. I get in the classroom, and the teacher, and they said, what's your middle name?
My middle name is Kirk.
So they said, Darren, what would you like to be called by? And so she went down the roll. And you got to understand, even Jane Mattingly, she's a white lady, a teacher, and she was a math teacher, ex-athlete. She's about 6'4". And everybody was scared of her. And everybody, people just talk about how she threw people out the window and she put boys' butts and, just beat them up. And I'm like, oh, God. So she's going down the list. She said, Darren was Karen. And you would say, Darren. They told Steve Benjamin or Steve. You go to somebody else. So she got to my name, Orlando Henry. And somebody said, Tubby. and she said, Orlando Henry. So, me, I'm going Tubby, because it just kind of came out. And now people are going, ooh, this woman's going to beat your butt. And the name kind of stuck because of that. At that time, it was just being used by my family. But now, you're a pretty good athlete. I'm at a new school. So it became a mockery, Tubby. And so that's kind of how it stayed with me. And I just said, well, I might as well accept it.
Coach Tubby Smith is with us on The Drive. A couple more things for you, Coach. I have the pleasure of being the voice of your High Point University men's basketball team. A tough one last night. facing and hosting the defending Big South tournament champions in Gardner-Webb. A really great game through, I would say, 30 to 35 minutes for your very young team, led by as many as 14 in the second half, and then let it slip away in overtime. I want to transpose that, if you'll let me, to the North Carolina Tar Heels, because that's a team of great concern to a lot of people in our listening audience too, and your friend Roy Williams is the coach there. And at 8-10, they're on track to potentially have the first losing season that Roy Williams has ever had as a head coach. And I think there, not that there are some direct parallels between your roster and his, but you know, he famously earlier this season said that it was the least talented team he's ever had at North Carolina. And it just begs the question, you know, he's dealt with guys transferring. He's had to play the transfer game, guys that he didn't quite expect to leave early for the pro ranks leave. And you and I have had discussions, too, about this sort of thing, just the nature of how building a roster has changed over these last, you know, even 5 to 10 years in college basketball.
Well, look at us. We weren't expecting any of these three freshmen to be starting, to be honest with you. I mean, had we had Tim Cameron back, Jahad Proctor, and Brandon Kamka, that would have been our backcourt.
Yeah.
Two fifth-year seniors and a junior who had transferred from UTEP. And they left. People go, well, why did they leave? Well, one went to Cal State Fullerton because I thought he thinks probably that's his West Coast. I guess he wanted to travel the world. And Elvin went to Purdue and was starting there in Jahad Proctor. Another young man went to another school because he's had some, you know, he just left. But he would have been, all three of those guys would have been. You see the difference? So now you have three freshmen. And so I can see, because when I talked with John Beilein at Michigan, because he called me about Jahad Proctor, Matt Painter, I talked to him about Jahad Proctor and a couple other guys. So I asked him, I said, what's going on, fellas, at your lecture? Well, you know, we're getting kids, they think they should be one and dones at our level, at the Big 12, at the Power 5 level. Now they're frustrated, and now they're ready to bolt. Or they're mad because they didn't get the playing time they thought, or the minutes they thought. So, and, you know, I'm sure that Roy Williams, you know, he took the kid Keeling from Charleston Southern, and he took a young man from William & Mary, because we played against both of those young men last year.
Yeah.
And, they're good kids and good students, good players. But that's the ACC. That's, you know, a little bit different. And so I'm sure that those are the things that – then you have the injury to Cole Anthony. And it's like us, you know, our leading scorer has a bad toe. So the little things like that, he's missed, what, 5 games now?
Yeah.
You know, Curtis Hollis has missed like 5 games, going to miss tomorrow's game. And, you know, Cliff Thomas was playing great. So he goes down with tendonitis. His knee swells up, has his knee drained. And so it can – now you have to depend on Emmanuel Zunabor, who's never played at this level and has only been playing basketball for about 3 years. and so it becomes – and but I'm what I'm saying is that guys like that are starting for us, like Brian Randleman, John Michael Wright, and Emmanuel Zunabor, they would not be really – they'd be coming off the bench this year and playing, being backups, as most freshmen have to do. Eric Coleman, you know, he may have started for us at the 4 spot, but who knows? But we got guys doing a good job. It's just, you know, we're losing those close games. Like we had about 3 or 4 chances just in the last possession to get that stop, but they get a second chance, knock down a 3, tie it up. We don't execute our play at the, you know, over to get the ball up and lose in overtime.
Coach Tubby Smith of High Point University is with us here on The Drive. Sorry to cut you off there, Coach. I'm actually up against a break, so I am going to let you go.
Okay.
But very much so appreciate the time coming on The Drive today, and I'll see you at the Millis Center tomorrow for another one against Longwood,
okay.
All right?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. That's Coach Tubby Smith, at Coach Tubby Smith on Twitter, the second-year head coach of the High Point men's basketball team, the Panthers, who I could the privilege to call their games. And, man, Robert, that was every bit as fascinating as I thought it would be, asking about his nickname. I'm glad I didn't let you talk me out of that.
No, I was so excited. As soon as he started talking about the tub, I could honestly feel for him because my grandpa's house is also heated by a wood stove still to this day. So I understand that warm water, you don't want to get out of that. You want to stay in that tub.
It actually reminded me, and I'm going to take a break so that I don't obliterate the clock so much. So I'm going to take a break first and then talk about probably how it reminded me of my father. He's one of 13. And similarly, his parents gave them all nicknames. So I have certain aunts and uncles. Oh. I don't have a Tubby. I don't have an Uncle Tubby. But they are only really known as those nicknames. So it was interesting. I cannot believe Tubby Smith and I had not made that connection. But it sounds almost exactly like my dad's family in that there were 13 of them. So they just all have nicknames. Like I've got an Uncle Stinky who is, you know, I didn't realize until I was about 18 or 19 years old that that's Steven.
I've got a stinky uncle, but I don't have an uncle named Stinky.
I have an uncle brother.
Uncle brother. Okay, yep. See, I've got an aunt sister.
Y'all are something else. Yeah, I don't know what's going on in y'all's family, but.
No, they just called him little brother growing up. Like, that was his name. The nickname was little brother. So when I came along, of course, he's my uncle, so I just called him Uncle Brother.
Uncle Brother. Uncle Brother. That's fantastic. Man, the nickname, I did not expect that to like carry us through the first 2 hours of the show, but it really, really has. And now I'm behind on breaks, so we got to do that. Robert, cut me off at any point and just say, hey, I got to hit these. But I'm going to kick it to you so that we can do that because we're like 7 minutes late on this break. So appreciate Tubby Smith and his time coming on with us. That was way better than I possibly could have anticipated. More fun along the lines of that coming up on The Drive.